So what's this one about?
Dude, we're going to Germany.
Oh, yeah, we're going to Germany. But this episode, I think it's Eric Anderson. And what? Oh, yeah. This is Novelopen Audio. Welcome to Novelopen Audio, the podcast that connects the Novel user community with what's going on inside and around the Novel universe. I'm your host, Ted Hager.
And I'm Aaron Quill.
Oh, yeah, you're here. Hey.
Why, yes, I am.
What's this episode all about this time?
Well, today we actually had a great opportunity. We are going to sit down and talk to Eric Anderson, who's the VP of Engineering over SUSE here at Novel.
And Eric is a really articulate guy and was the guy that was pretty much in charge of when Novel and SUSE started to merge together and had to go through this process that has culminated now with SUSE Linux Enterprise 10. He's the guy that was over that stuff.
Yeah, and it's kind of cool because Eric not only dealt with technical issues, but Eric dealt with quite a few different cultural issues of really, you know, taking an organization that started up first open source and then very, very German, very process-oriented, and pulled that in and helped combine that with, you know, a corporation that's based out of the States.
He did the social side of integrating the two companies. Pretty amazing work he had to do. So we talked to Eric on an extended interview, but we've got other things going on as well. We're about to hit the road, Aaron and I, and we're going, where are we going first?
Well, actually, first, we're going to go to Paris, and we're going to speak at a users group over in Paris, France. And we're going to go over there. We're going to show off some of the new things that are in SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop, which is just shipping now. And we're also going to show off some cool things in the server as well. We're going to show off Gen, our virtualization that we've been working on.
Yeah, and I'm going to be doing the desktop demos there. So we got a pretty big show happening there. And if you're one of our listeners in Paris, France, or anywhere around that area, you can get in contact with Jimmy Pierre by going to nui.fr, and that's Nui, France. So that's what Jimmy runs there. This is going to be a major Linux event that we're doing here. It's not just Novel stuff, but we're going to focus on SUSE Linux Enterprise 10. And if you want to get to know anybody in that group, or you want to meet us and you're in France, you can come meet us there. What else?
But after France, things get cool.
Oh, yeah. We're heading out to see John O'Bacon and his brethren from Lug Radio Live, or from Lug Radio, and the event is Lug Radio Live. And this is going to be a blast. We're in Wolverhampton, UK. Wolverhampton is absolutely beautiful this time of year, I understand.
I hear it is just pretty much, I mean, it's the heart of the UK. This, forget London, forget any of that.
Destination city, Wolverhampton.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Without a doubt.
So we'll be there at Lug Radio Live. Come on up and say hello to us if you're one of our listeners. We're hoping to have some media there for giving out for SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop 10. We're going to be doing demos. Aaron's going to be showing a lot of the virtualization stuff. I'll be showing desktop stuff. We'll be helping people set up XGL or desktop effects if they want that. We're doing a SUSE Linux Birds of a Feather session there. We're doing a lightning talk there. And I think Aaron and I have gotten somehow roped into emceeing the other lightning talks.
Oh, my gosh. And that's going to be bad.
When I say roped into, you just got roped into it because I've been roped into it.
What's funny, guys, is I haven't heard about this up until just now. Thanks, Ted.
Yeah, you're on for it. After Wolverhampton, Aaron and I head to, and this is where we want you, our listeners, to give us some advice. We're going to Nuremberg, SUSE Linux Labs.
The home of SUSE. Yeah, we're going to go hang out with the serious guys over there.
We've got a bunch of different stuff we want to talk to them about. We already know a lot of people want to hear about XEN or Xen, the virtualization, some of the kernel stuff. We're hoping to get the chance to sit down with Kurt Garloff there. We've also got a lot of other people. Sonia Krauss-Harder, the developer evangelist who's been working on the build server for SUSE Linux.
KDE. We're going to have a chance to sit down and talk to some people about what's happening with KDE, get the latest update on that.
They've been beating me up about too much GNOME lately. And, you know, and I know now the GNOME guys will beat me up about KDE.
Yeah. We're just going to add flames to the fire, man.
Yeah, but if you have suggestions for people that you want us to talk to or things that you want us to do, definitely get on with it and send us email openaudio@novel.com. I think without further ado, let's check out what Eric Anderson has to say. So in the studio, we have Eric Anderson joining Aaron Quill and myself. And Eric, welcome to Novell Open Audio. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Eric, so let's just get down right to it and talk about you and what you've been doing with SUSE Linux. You started running the SUSE organization about how long ago?
It was about November in 2004 that I began.
Okay. And tell us, if you would, what's the story? How did you, I mean, you live here in Utah, right?
That's right.
How did you end up running SUSE? And how's that work? I mean, do you manage remotely or what?
Well, I think the simplest way to describe that is if you roll back the clock to the 04 time frame. What I did originally was I went to SUSE. Marcus Rex introduced me to the team, and I started building relationships with the teams by meeting each team individually, trying to understand what that team was about, what their passions were, where they felt they were successful or not. Take that a little bit forward. I moved, in essence, to Germany. My family remained in Utah, as you indicated. And I would live in Germany when I first started a month at a time. And so I would just have a flat there. I'd go live in that flat, and I'd go to work every day just like anyone else would. And in the process of doing that, I gained relationships with different members of the team. The one thing that I saw about SUSE that was very powerful is I saw a very large number of very capable people that were in leadership positions or were not fully empowered in those positions. And so the first objective that I set for myself was to actually empower those people so that they could run things themselves and, in essence, give SUSE back to the SUSE community, if that makes sense. And so from that, I focused on each of those people. We made a little bit of organizational change to put them in positions where they were recognized as leaders. And then we worked with developing the management team. As that team grew in capability, that afforded me the opportunity to be able to commute on a less lengthy basis. So I eventually got down to the point where I was 2 weeks in Germany and 2 weeks off Germany. And when I was off, SUSE ran very well because of the capabilities of the people that were there.
Yeah, well,
are you still going back and forth to Germany quite a bit then?
I was until just recently because of some of the changes that Novell's making and I'm making personally. For about the last 5-6 weeks now, I've been able to be here. Why, SUSE ran great by itself, so the guys have done a great job there.
How's your German doing?
Well, ich kann Deutsch sprechen. When I went, I didn't speak a word of German, but I've... through the help of the team there, I can sit in meetings in German and understand everything that's going on. I'm not that great at the language. When I say things, they kind of smile and respond in English. But it's been
fun. They pat you on the head and say, very good, Eric.
Indeed.
Actually,
it's been fun to learn, though.
I've got to say, that's one of the things that's impressed me most about not just our SUSE team, but Germans in general. Their knowledge of English is just fantastic. I mean, I can walk through the Nuremberg office, and it's just no worries at all about language.
Aaron, what impressed you even more is when you're in the office there, you find out that there are people that are Austrian. You'll find out that there are people that are from Denmark and other places. So it's not that they just speak English. In a lot of cases, they speak 3 or 4 languages. It's incredible to see the ability they have. And as I had the opportunity to get to know Marcus and his family, I got to watch how his daughter goes through school and get a kind of an inside view of education there. And what you'll find is most kids, when they're going through school there, they either have to learn Latin, French, and English, or some combination of languages as they go through their school experience.
And that's Marcus Rex you're speaking
yes,
of?
Yes, Marcus Rex.
Yeah, okay. Uh-huh. And Marcus Rex, for people's information, what is Marcus's role there?
Marcus is the CTO in the Open Platform Services Group.
Okay. Now, as far as your job of going to SUSE and doing this VP of engineering role that you did there, you had a big integration task on your hands because you're pretty much the Novell guy that went over to Germany. Tell us a little bit about that, if you can, of what kind of things did you find as far as just cultural differences that, you know, had to be worked through or anything like that in order to get SUSE Linux Enterprise 10, so it could become what it is today?
Okay, so the first thing I would tell you is that there's no way I could take credit for being a single individual that did that. there were many people inside of Novell that went back and forth in terms of trips. Usually it was either based on a particular exchange, like the documentation team, for example, sent somebody over. He stayed there for several months, worked with the team, and they grew a relationship on a team-to-team basis.
That's our friend Scott Rhodes, correct?
That's Scott Rhodes,
yeah.
You bet. He did a great job. The team there loves him. He blended well. He also spoke German as well. There have been several people actually from Novell who've been over there who speak German, and I think that the guys there really appreciate that because it suggests that we're a little bit more multinational than, you know, all being people living in Utah speaking English.
Not what you expect from the Americans coming over.
Indeed.
Usually is the bilingual ability is usually not associated with that.
So I can't take credit for it by myself. I mean, it's a lot of people in Novell that deserve the credit for that. With regards to the cultural changes and whatnot, there are a lot of cultural changes that are there. I'd like to kind of highlight a couple of those that I think are really cool in my estimation. The first one that I learned very early in the process was that people in Bavaria, which is where Nuremberg is and Seuss is at, and Germans probably in general, are very process-oriented people. And in the process, yeah, very much so. That's why they build the cars they do. So because they're very process oriented, one of the really cool things about them is they're never afraid to look at the process and try to tune it, to always ask, what could we have done better? How could we be more efficient? And the thing that's amazing about that is it's not just a process by itself, but it's actually the people content of that process. So, gosh, we didn't work so well with the team in Provo on this. I wonder if we would have contacted this person or did this, or maybe we could work better with that person to get a better relationship going. They're always doing that. Every meeting, there's almost a postmortem, if you will, inside the meeting to try to improve it. I was very impressed by that because that meant that they were open to listening.
That's an attitude of maturity that's a real nice thing to have.
I definitely like to think so, and I think it's contributed significantly to some of the successes with integrations with teams inside of Provo. The other thing that I think people don't quite get that's in the German culture is Germans are very direct. A lot of people take that personally, and they think that when somebody's being real direct, they're biting at you or they're going at you. That's not the case at all. What they're doing is it's a process of improvement, and so they're very honest with you. So I'd rather like to think of it as honesty rather than directness. And all I'm saying is that they're going to tell you exactly how they feel or where they're at so that you can focus on that, and between you and them, you can improve the process together. Once I understood that, the ability to grow with that group was incredible. People wonder, why is it that the Sousa team can always produce on time? Why is it that they always have volumes of work, you know, 3,500 packages that they somehow maintain and create a distribution and do it like clockwork? That's why.
Now that brings up actually a question that I think is a really relevant question for our conversation with you, because from my work that I deal with in user communities and things, I interact with a lot of people who have been longtime Novell fans or longtime Sousa fans, and most of them see the marriage of the two companies as having been positive for Sousa Linux, but I do run into those people that have critiques about it, sometimes very direct critiques. You know, Novell has harmed Sousa Linux. Sousa Linux is not the thing it used to be. What's your take on what kind of benefit and what kind of also let's get really forthright about it. What kind of detraction or what kind of deterioration to Sousa has happened through the process of Novell and Sousa coming together?
Okay, let's focus on the positive side first. There's a tremendous benefit to the user community of Linux when you bring Novell and Sousa together, and we're realizing that. The first one I would tell you is Novell itself has 20 years worth of history of knowing how to support a customer. All of our systems are tuned around that. We know how to be very efficient about that, but we also know how to take care of a customer. In the Sousa case, Sousa never had the capacity to do all of that because of the sheer number of customers that Novell would bring to the table and the amount of people that were there. So what we've been able to do in that regard is we've been able to take some of the Novell policies of support and bring those to Sousa and also engage in NTS or our support organization to front a lot of that. That's the first benefit that's there. So SUSE has a much higher customer service orientation or face than they ever could have had themselves. The second one is in the level of testing on the product. First, let me tell you that when you walk the halls of SUSE in a release and you watch how hard people are working and you watch the hours that they're spending to try to get the product to be as high a quality as possible, what you realize is they don't want to ship anything that they would not put their name on. That's incredible to watch. It's a dedication level that's just, it's awe-inspiring to watch. On the other hand, you also have to realize that Novell has a tremendous experience in how to scale applications to very massively large enterprises.
Oh, yeah.
And how to test for that. And so we've been able to bring that testing into the release criteria for SUSE. And so now these products are going through the same level of very high-scale testing that Novell has done in its products for years. So these are the positives. I suppose the third one that you could say is we have an engine of communication to the world through our corporate marketing capabilities, through our sales capabilities, that SUSE didn't ever have.
And through Novell Open Audio.
Indeed. So these are the positive things that have come together to make the marriage between the two a lot stronger. There are countless internal disciplines that I see now spreading across Novell that are also very cool. So I think Novell's actually gaining from SUSE as
learning
well.
Learning process, you mean, that
exactly.
kind of thing?
Oh, the whole auto build thing. I mean, the first time I heard the concept of actually what they do with auto build, again, it just totally blew my mind, the way that they'd figure out a way to automate the building of not just the OS, but all these applications and dependencies and the libraries. It was just fantastic.
So what's really cool about that is auto build is more than just a build system. Auto build is a process.
Yeah, it's almost a philosophy.
When you get into that process helps you become very efficient in delivering a product.
And so I think that's one that will be next week. Aaron and I are going to be in Nuremberg interviewing people. That's going to be one that we definitely want to get there for our Open Audio listeners. So if you don't know what we're talking about with Open Audio right now, we'll get more of that coming up.
So I hope that you'll have the opportunity to interview Ralph Flaxa.
Yeah,
while you're
Ralph
there.
Is on our list.
Ted, write that name down.
Got it.
Ralph does two things that I think are really wonderful. The one is that he's wrapped a process around that auto build system, and then he's introduced this notion of technical project managers. When you combine these two together, it's the magic. It's the secret in the sauce, if you will. You asked about what are some of the things where SUSE has felt impacted. I'll give you a few of those that have come from the community directly. We have a project called Open SUSE. And in the Open SUSE project, we have all sorts of forums, and people communicate with us through those forums, and we read and take those seriously. Well, some of the things that you hear in those forums, the first probably strongest one I've ever heard, is a lot of people felt that if we were going to place the Novell name on SUSE Linux, in other words, call it Novell Linux, a lot of people felt that that was going to be damaging to the product. So there's a natural tendency to want to put your name on something because we're proud of what it is and we have an identity with that name. There are a lot of people that felt like SUSE's image was tarnished through the process of the potentiality of that name being placed there. I think we've since probably allayed those fears by now calling it SUSE Linux Enterprise and actually using the SUSE brand. I think that's great. A second one that I think is there is Novell's a big company, and being a big company, you have lots of teams and lots of processes that you have to deal with, and when you do that, that becomes a burden on top of something that was very entrepreneurial and very very simple chains of command to get decisions made and whatnot. And so the SUSE team itself felt bogged down through those processes.
Just by the overstructure or overburden of having a big bureaucratic thing compared to what they were before.
You take a decision that took 1 week and now it takes five.
Yeah.
So it's a challenge to them because they are, I like to liken them to racehorses. These guys run fast and they're very efficient in that process. And so you can see, remember we talked about processes a few minutes ago, it's counter to that very process that they live under. The last one I'll give you real quick is we did go through an experience and we still discuss K KDE versus GNOME. I don't want to get into the topic per se, but the community does watch those things. And they worry about whether Novell will change SUSE's ability to make decisions or contributions in the community. And it's the latter one, I think, that people really worry about. Will we no longer allow free open code to go into the community and allow the community to have the benefit of the knowledge and experience that we have?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, actually, that's an interesting one because the passion is very strong out there. A lot of SUSE Linux users actually listen to this show and read my blog and things like that. And because lately I've been covering SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop, GNOME has been getting a lot of love. I haven't been giving enough to KDE, and I've received a half dozen emails just recently that have said, hey, where's the love? Where's the KDE coverage? Are you going to Academy this fall? You went to GUADEC, those kind of things. So, yeah, it's seen
and
a lot of that.
I think we are continuing those things. And I think, you know, for the community listeners that are there, you know, I can tell you that everybody inside of SUSE is very, very community-oriented, myself included. We recognize the contributions of a lot of hard work from a lot of people out there who are developing code out of the goodness of their heart or because of an itch they want to scratch. And they contribute that to everybody else because they assume that other people itch as well. I'm using Eric Raymond's term for how open
source works. Scratch your own itch, yeah.
That's it.
Everybody loves Eric Raymond.
So what I would tell you is that we are very dedicated to that. There's nothing in our operation that has altered with regards to the contributions to the community that we would make, that we want to make, and that we do make. But I think that people have perceived that having Novell being a closed source company would mean that we would discontinue the practice of interacting and contributing to the community. It's definitely not the case.
It's gone the other way with OpenSUSE, right?
Indeed.
Well, not just OpenSUSE, with just quite a few of our projects. As you've been seeing, we've been turning them over to open source whenever they make sense. So, Nat Friedman is your peer leading up the desktop side of Linux within Novell. Is the division between power as simple as Nat handles the desktop and you're over the server? Or do you guys work together, share things back and forth? How does that relationship work?
So let me answer the first part of the question with regards to is it as simple as he has the desktop and I have the server, so to speak. It's not quite that simple. There's a common code base that we're both based in. That common code base resides in Nuremberg. And what Nat's team does is from basically the X server level all the way through the desktop, they contribute the desktop portion of what happens. There's a tremendous amount of work that goes on in Nuremberg to support that desktop. So in that regard, we truly are married at the common code base level, and I would say roughly about 80% maybe of the desktop is actually produced in Nuremberg. From the SUSE team, if you will. I think we try to treat the desktop team as part of the SUSE team. There are times when there are demands for a desktop on part of the subsystems below that are contrary to what you want to do in the server space. When those happen, then we've got to collaborate with each other, and we've got to come up with an escalation process and an arbitration process that allows us to make the best decision possible. The reason that needs to be that way is we've got to keep a common code base. First, it's the only way we'll ever be efficient. The second one is more important to the user, and that is when you get that common code base, what they get is a common experience in terms of usage, in terms of management, in terms of control of both the desktop and the server, and that's something we want to preserve.
As well as patchability and, you know, not forking that code just makes a huge difference for us to have the ability to support that down the road.
Absolutely.
I've been blown away myself by the fact that, and I know that this is weird witch doctor voodoo stuff as far as supportability goes, but I've been able to add packages from Enterprise Server onto my desktop for like if I want to do Samba configuration and things like that and have it work just perfectly without any hiccups or anything like that. Now, I know that we wouldn't support a Samba server running from a Linux desktop as, you know, out there, but for me, for my personal use as just a geek, that's been really cool.
So the weird voodoo magic is what I call OpenSUSE. So OpenSUSE has a product that it delivers called SUSE Linux. SUSE Linux is a product with 3,500 packages, and that product makes no distinction about whether it's a desktop or a server. So if you take that base and you do that common base well, then creating a server and creating a desktop from it is very easy. What you're in essence doing is putting the pieces back together from SUSE Linux when you're taking that SOM server and putting it on your desktop. You'll find many, many cases of interoperability like that.
That's very nice.
So we just released code 10 across the board.
Hallelujah.
It's got to feel good.
It does.
That includes SUSE Linux Enterprise Server 10 as well as SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop 10.
That's right.
What's significant about code 10 outside of what you covered earlier that, you know, this is the first major release after we acquired SUSE and kind of the first release from the ground up? What are the big differences in this release, and what can I look forward to seeing?
And in your answer, this might set us up for, you know, some of the stuff we're going to do next week in Nuremberg when we talk to different people. So, I mean, feel free to give us a few high-level things, and we can delve deeper.
Okay, great. In fact, I think we'll have to do that because of the time we have to operate on. Plus, there are experts in each of those levels that are deeper or could go deeper than I ever could. I think the first one to tell you is the common code base we just talked about. So that was the significant thing we wanted to do at the beginning. If you go back to SLES 9 and SLED 9, or what we called NLD 9
Novell
at that
Linux
time.
Desktop, yeah.
If you go to those, what you see is you see that SLES was the base, and then we kind of deviated or forked from that base to create the desktop product. In the process of doing that, there was always this gap between some of the packages that sat in the server and some that sat in the desktop. And so you were challenged with the fact that because one's different than the other, did you pick up features that were a little bit different than the other? And what major accounts wanted was they wanted to have those packages be the same, all the way to the point of timestamps and checksums to be exactly identical so that they could support the two the same way. So the first major thing is we got a common code base under all of this so that everybody does have that experience. We felt that was critical. Then as you branch off each of the products, you'll see different things that are cool. I'll hit the server side first. On the server side, one of the things that we did is we recognized that in the patch and update case, customers wanted to use one method for doing that. If you go back in time and look at our products, you'll see that we had a red carpet thing, we had a U thing, we even had a Zen thing going on. You put all of those, sounds kind of groovy, doesn't it? you put all those together and nobody knows what to do in terms of patch and update. So the first feature we went after was how do you bring all those together into one? That took the concentrated effort of part of the ZenWorks team, the desktop team, the SUSE team to bring all of that together. I am absolutely proud of the team for being able to do that. We actually delivered that, and it was hard. If you were going through our betas and watching the product, you would have recognized how hard that problem was because it was either slow, it was buggy, it would fall over. By the time we got to shipment, we got so much of that rattled out and so much better performance than where we were through the beta cycles. It's incredible, the difference.
So I want to make sure I understand that. So what you're talking about is, I remember on the previous versions of like NLD or what have you, I'd bring up YAS2 when I'd launch YAS2 and it would go out and it would do the online update and it would see some patches, and then I'd pull up the red carpet client and it would see totally different patches that had to be applied. So what you're saying is now those are talking to the same back-end service?
Yes.
And it's the same front-end tool that you're using for doing the updates.
That's right. That's right. If you look, you still have the YAST experience, but YAST is actually going through a combined agent of ZenWorks and YAST itself to do that update. On the back-end system, which is another feature we're going to talk about, we introduced a concept called NCC, or the Novell Customer Center. This Novell Customer Center is the definitive source of patches from Novell, as well as activations and your licensing and whatnot. So you can actually very easily track all of your servers on the web. And this is integrated into the installation process for SUSE Linux Enterprise products. So the server on the back end there is actually a ZenWorks server.
Oh, cool.
And it has multiple channels, as they were called in the red carpet days. It has multiple channels, and so all those patches are all going into those channels, and they're all now architecture aware. So when you go and log into this thing and you say you want patches, we know all about you, and we'll target the right patches for you, and you don't have to go hunting through channels to get the right patches. So it's a pretty cool thing that we've done a lot of cleanup, but the biggest thing is you only go one way.
Right.
You don't have to go through multiple different systems to do it. And you'll see that on the client side, the other thing that we did is you had the YAST experience you described where you could get very deep details about all the packages and you could look at patterns of things and how you wanted things installed. Well, we also gave you a very simplified client. A lot of people, all they want to do is see a notification, patch me, and just click something and be patched.
Yeah.
They don't care about the details. And so we introduced something that we call Zen Updater, which is this kind of globe-looking icon in your tray down there that all you have to do is just – it'll change. It'll give you an indication that you need to click it to say you want to be updated. You click it, you're updated. It's as simple as that.
Actually, I do want to slide in one quick comment about YAST. One of the things – and I only learned this a couple months ago, but I just loved it. When I found that I could go into YAST – and I could add additional sources besides Novell as where to grab stuff from. It was so nice to do that, point it to like one of the Pac-Man servers, and now I've got access to all this other code that, again, I can just select an application, automatically install it on my machine, and from that point forward, it's automatically updated whenever somebody updates that Pac-Man server or whatever the other source I'm going for is.
Yeah, that's basically the same idea that we used on the desktop side of the equation to get you video drivers in support of XGL.
Yeah, in fact, I'd like you to give a quick description of how that works now, because it is really exciting, and it's a lot easier for end users to get those NVIDIA cards and ATI cards to run.
Okay, let's hit a couple things on the server first, and then I'll give you that side of the equation.
Actually, we're going to have Chris Cooper coming in about a week and a half, Chris Cooper from developer department, and he's going to tell us all about the driver downloads process from a partner view.
Oh, neat.
So shut you up, right?
Dang.
So let me give you another thing to ask him about that is – this is totally cool. We have a thing called the Kernel Module Update System. What this allows you to do is – people in the past have worried about whenever they take a driver, it's going to break the kernel because it's linked into the kernel. We introduced this really cool driver update process where you can actually – look for drivers, you can actually bring them into the kernel, and you can decide whether you want those to go in or not, or the kernel can actually search for new updates for you. This is a really cool system, and Chris Cooper's team had the opportunity to work with us on building that system together. So you ask him about that. It's really, really cool.
All right.
In fact, it's so industry-leading in terms of what we're doing, and it solves such a long-standing critical commercial problem in Linux as to how you get commercial drivers that Red Hat and other people are now starting to follow us. In terms of how this works. So it's a really cool system. So ask him about that, okay, because I don't think we'd have time today to do it, but it's a really cool system that you want to hear about.
Yeah, let's get the rest of the quick summary list of some of the big things that you see on the server side of things.
So on the server side, we talked about update. The next one is we introduced the storage foundation. The storage foundation is a combination of three technologies. The first one is OCFS2. So we joined forces with Oracle, took on a co-maintainership with them of OCFS2.
And that's Oracle's file system,
this
right?
is Oracle's file system, the Oracle clustered file system. And that clustered file system has a really important characteristic to it that will lead to the biggest feature of SLES. And that is that it's tuned for very large images. So when you want a very large file, like a database file or a virtual machine file, this is the type of operator file system that you want to do that, because it delivers very large file sizes to you very quickly. And a virtual image is something on the order of 3 to 4 gig in size.
And you can push beyond probably 4 gig on the file system
as
well.
Indeed.
So that's pretty important.
Yep. So the second piece that goes with that is the volume manager. So we worked with IBM on the extended volume manager. This is important to you for two reasons. Number one is it allows us to dynamically modify volumes, and we can now take our management tools, set them on top of that, and drive automation of volume management for you. The second thing that it did is it is an extensible volume manager. It is the extension capability that we've added to support things like NSS.
Novell Storage Services, the file system classically on NetWare.
Correct. We took a piece of that called the Media Manager, and it now becomes an extension to EVMS, and it allows us to bring all of our file system technologies together. So the third one was we introduced added to the storage foundation something that we called the Cluster Resource Manager. Some people have heard of this called as Heartbeat 2. Mm-hmm. What this does is two things that are really important to you. The first thing that it does is it obviously is watching machines and making sure that machines and clusters are there and that they're staying up, or if one goes down, it fails over to the other. The other thing that's really cool about it is that it has the notion of taking a virtual resource and being able to apply that virtual resource to a physical resource. And now, subsequently, you can take virtual machines and just add them into clusters transparently. So this brings the whole genre of virtualization and physical servers all together in a clustered environment at the same time. So it's not just about giving you virtualization. It's about giving you high availability virtualization.
Oh, that's cool. So I actually create a cluster that then I run my virtual servers on.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's correct.
Very nice. So we'll get some of this stuff into interviews that we do, as well as, I mean, there's a ton of other features that we haven't been able to hit here, but I think we're at some, like, almost 30 minutes of interview here. So,
well, I want to hear a little bit more. Weren't you going to hit on the desktop?
So let's hit the one on the desktop, and we'll stop there, and we can there are so many features. There are hundreds of features we could talk about. Virtualization on the server side is the one that I want you to really drill on, because we've done so much work with the Zen community, and we are the first distribution to deliver for production virtualization for accounts. So I think that's an important one too.
Well, and one quick comment on that, because I've looked at Zen before and I've seen it, and it's always been kind of a pain to configure. When I played with one of the early release candidates of SLES, I was blown away that creating virtual machines, and in fact the process of installing Zen, was point and click. I mean, it was so simple, literally anyone could create a virtual machine with this.
That's correct. At BrainShare, in fact, I stood in front of thousands of people and in two clicks created a virtual machine live in front of them. So it is very easy to do. And, of course, that was important to us, because people have been waiting for this technology for quite some time. We had to make it simple for people to use.
Anybody that's looking at – actually, that's the value of SUSE Linux with YAST on the XEN or Zen stuff, right?
That's absolutely correct. Yes.
All right.
Yep. So let's go to the desktop side for just a second here. So there's a cool new feature in the desktop called XGL. XGL gives you the ability to basically do cube-like faces. I'm sure that you've talked about some of these in interviews, or you'll do some more. It gives you the ability to give thumbnail views of your applications and whatnot, and you can actually see live updated views, so it's not just static pictures and whatnot.
Some of our listeners also will be able to look back in the archive here and go back to the David Reeveman interviews. We've done two interviews with David Reeveman about that specifically. So, yeah, they should be... I'm hoping everyone out there is familiar.
Well, it's pretty cool stuff. And so if you take that, now combine that with the update process, when you install and turn on 3D capability in your graphics card, we'll actually sense whether you have the right drivers or not. And if you don't have the right drivers, through a partnership that we have with ATI and with NVIDIA, we'll actually go to their sites, find those drivers for you through that same update mechanism that you talked about earlier, and they'll actually automatically pull those down for you, install those for you.
Very cool.
Yeah, that's actually, I documented that on my blog a little bit, of just exactly how easy it is, because so many people are used to XGL being such a bear to get set up, you know, get the drivers in place and make sure that everything's working, and then, you know, and this is just such a turnkey process.
Yep, if you can click a button that says enable 3D or enable XGL, you can do it.
That's
great. That simple.
So maybe if Aaron will let me conclude this time, may I?
Sure.
Okay, one last question.
Are you going to drop into your announcer voice?
No, I'm not going to do the announcer voice. That's coming up as soon as we're done with this interview, though. But, boy, you can really... But here's the question for you.
I can't wait to hear the commercial.
Exactly. Here's the question for you, a quick one. I've heard that your role here at Novell is changing. You just got SUSE Linux Enterprise 10 out the door, and now you've been living semi-abroad for quite a while. What's going on with you? What's next for Eric Anderson?
Okay, so it's kind of exciting for me. You're right. I've worked with the SUSE team. I've absolutely loved that experience. It's been an incredible experience for me personally in terms of growth, and I've got to say that I've got a lot of friends at SUSE and built relationships that I hope will last a very long time. But my personal background is actually in the area of systems management. A lot of people don't realize that I've spent well over 20 years in that space and was one of the original developers of a technology in the systems management space that is still today the number one product in that space. It's a product called Patrol from BMC Software. So I'm now having the opportunity, since I've worked in the platform side of things, the key thing that you want to do is with a platform is be able to manage it well. And so now I get the opportunity to take that 20 years worth of experience plus all the capabilities that the system and resource management team has, plus the relationship we have with the platform, and I get to bring all of that together now as the VP of engineering for the systems and resource management group. So I think this is really cool. It's fun for me and exciting for me personally, but what it means is Novell's going to take another step at a very large level of integration towards bringing those technologies together so that we deliver not only the coolest and best server and desktop platforms, but now the best managed server and desktop platform.
That's pretty neat. So you're taking what you've been doing with SUSE Linux plus your past and now applying it in the Novell resource management or the classic ZenWorks line. That's going to be what you're running.
That's correct.
Awesome. Very cool.
Yep.
Eric, thanks very much for joining us today. We really appreciate you taking some time with us, and we'll be patching out some interviews from Nuremberg with some of these people you've been working with.
Great. Awesome. Thanks for letting me be here today. Appreciate
thanks.
It.
And we're back with the announcer's voice. This is Novell Open Audio saying, hey, we'll see you after a week and a half of being on the road. Aaron and I will be back to start putting out more episodes. We do have an interview with the GroupWise guys about GroupWise mobile server that still hasn't happened yet, and I'm hoping that the guys are going, Mike, are you going to get that done? He just raises his hands up and doesn't want to say a thing because he knows we're on air. Remember, Novell Open Audio is a production of Novell Users International in conjunction with Novell Incorporated. You can reach us by going to our website at www.novell.com/openaudio. You can tell us what to put on the air, suggest topics to us, and we have a list right now as long as our arms to try to get done. We're going to get some of that done while we're in Nuremberg at the SUSE Labs. And we take email requests at openaudio@novell.com. And on the website, you'll also find our 800 number, and we'd love to have your messages on our 800 number because we like to play that kind of thing on the air, and not enough of you are calling. I get all kinds of email. But anyway, that's our show for this time around. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time when we're back from Nuremberg.